They kept the Shemitah, and they found out by keeping the Shemitah rules, Hashem gave more blessing before and more blessing afterwards, so that they were much better off than the others. And for example, with a huge plague of locusts, the locusts attacked all the fields around which weren't kept Shemitah. When they came to the fields of Shemitah, the locusts just went the other way. Hashem shows miracles. So this person, Huterman, Professor Huterman. So when there was this conference here, so I invited him, and I asked him about his research and so on. He says, yes, Moses. So I said to him, do you really believe that Moses knew all these things? Can you believe that human beings should know what has only become known in more recent times, in the course of the generations, and especially in more recent science of ecology has been developed enormously? Before, it was also known in certain areas. That all comes from the human being? So they said, of course not. There's no human being who would do this. So why do you write Moses? Moses is such a great man. So he said, well, if I would write in that this is divine law, then I would lose my job. They'd say, you can't be a professor at university and teach them theology when you're dealing with science. How dare you mix up the two? And there I wouldn't have my position. And also, you know, they wouldn't publish my articles, many journals, because the journals have to be academic. Academic means, you know, to forget about Hashem. That's it, in the world. But today it's changing a bit, you see. True, here in Israel, unfortunately, they had the head of the scientific department of the Ministry of Education, who was in charge of all the science programs. And that was one of the top scientists in the country. But he was a religious person. So he said, alright, you can teach Darwinistic evolution, but you should also teach the designer option. The concept of the world is designed by God, by a creator. So they dismissed him from his position, from the Ministry of Education. See, hear how far this dogma. Because the truth is that there's nothing as rational as the acceptance of God. And those who don't want to accept God, they're the ones who are irrational. That's it. But therefore Hashem had this in mind when he chose Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe is our teacher. We always speak with our teacher. Was he teaching us something which he received from his teacher? Where did he get it from? From Hashem. That's it. Everything by Moshe comes from Hashem. And the zero character comes from Hashem. So that's true. But you see, what often happens is that even kings like Pharaoh, when they were confronted with Yosef and then with Yaakov, they believed in Hashem. They recognized Hashem was the true path. But the environment of so much impurity, so much materialism. So, Ashalu Idashi said they forgot about Yosef. They may have been in the same paro. It could be new paro. Okay. Now, this is the challenge to be faced, in a way, by all of us. Are we going to live in accordance with the acceptance of Hashem, which is also, we always regard it, the choice, as we spoke before more at length, about the choice between truth and falsehood, and the choice between good and evil, and the two are related. Because if a person really clings to the ultimate truth, that Hashem is the one who leads the world, and Hashem is the one who leads my life, and He's given me the choice to cling to the truth or to give falsehood. In all things in life, I can admit the ultimate truth, which is revealed in my soul, which tells me when I'm going right and when I'm going wrong. Also in such things which have to do with human behavior, and ultimately everything depends upon human behavior. And if a person behaves in such a manner that he clings to the ultimate truth of Hashem and his Torah that is given to me, and it's also given me the Torah from outside revelation. It's also given me the Torah in my soul, because that is the ultimate truth. But often, I think if the ultimate truth is that I mustn't let's take the last of the Ten Commandments. I mustn't be jealous of somebody else's great success. I mustn't be jealous of somebody else's money, somebody else's happiness, somebody else's wife. I mustn't be jealous of it. Do tachmod. Because that's the ultimate truth. I shouldn't be. And if I think carefully, what causes me unhappiness? It's my jealousy. So therefore, I regard other people as limiting my own ambitions. So who's talking there? My evil inclination, my selfishness, my materialism. But the soul says, treat your fellow man like yourself. It doesn't mean nullify yourself completely. Like Moshe Rabbeinu knew who he was, ultimately. Hashem has chosen him. And each one of us, it says in fact in the Rambam, each human being can be a saint like Moshe Rabbeinu, or a sinner like Rav Ben Avot, according to what he's given. Means each person is given a different type of personality, is given different type of parents and family of somebody else. All this has an influence upon him. And the ultimate essence of the human being is his soul, which is called the breath of Hashem. And Hashem put the breath of his own essence into me. And that is truth. And the more I accept that and I open myself to that truth, it says, if you will, Joshmatem et abrit hazot, if you, the people of Israel, will keep this covenant, which is to be true to your own inner self. This is, as the famous man of literature said, to thine own self be true, then thou cannot be false to any man. And who is your own self? Your own self is your own inner character. And the innermost character of the human being is his soul. And the soul tells us, through what we call the conscience, what's right and what's wrong. And that inner self is strengthened by the power of the Torah. Because the Torah is really the expression of the soul of Hashem. Because it says, Ner Hashem Nishmat Adam. The soul of man is the lamp of Hashem. And the lamp of Hashem is the Torah from the outside. The Torah which we've been given is that which can keep the soul going. And you know, if we go into it deeply in human history, I mean, what was Hitler's perhaps the most revealing source of his mania of anti-Semitism, in which the Mufti of Jerusalem joined him? What did he say in his conversations? He said, we have to destroy every member of the Jewish people for their strength in the human conscience, and we have to destroy it. Destruction of the conscience. That's what he said. Well, that is, in one phrase, explains to us also such situations today that the Nazi concept has gone into the even more wild fantasies of the extreme Muslims, which is so terrible. And it explains to us also why in Europe there's so many people joining. Because those seeds to destroy the conscience are still strong, even in Western civilization. They haven't been eradicated enough. And, you know, unfortunately we've got a rather ambiguous with its connection with, you know, President of America. So we don't know what's happening. It's busy. But ultimately, it all depends upon our choice. Okay. So now I'm going to go back to the text. Unless you've got a few questions, you can ask them now. If not, I'll go back a bit to the text. Because this is very deep, yes.
There's a Gemara, I don't think I've ever studied it, that says that human nature is such that no matter which stature you are in life, you want something that somebody else has.
Yes.
So, when you're saying ambition and selfishness and whatever, that's... So that it must be one of the trials that...
Yeah.
That you have to...
Yeah.
Or no matter what you have, whatever, you always want something that somebody else has.
Now, so here we have a principle as follows. We say every day, V'ahavtet Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha. You should love Hashem with the totality of your double heart. Because the Hebrew word lev is a single heart, levav is a double heart. And we say before Kriyat Shema, V'yached levavenu. Make our double heart into one unity. to serve you in truth.
When do we say this?
In the bracha before saying the Shema. V'yachid lavenu la'ava ol yiret shamecha. Unite our heart to love and fear your name. Now, this is the love of Hashem, as it's expressed afterwards in the Shema, with a double heart. The double heart, the sages say, it's b'shnei yitzarecha, with both your inclinations. In order that a human being should be given the ability not to be a robot, like all the animals and the plants, they're all robots, and they have no freedom of choice, the human being has been given freedom of choice. We've got a materialistic animal nature, which is well known to the scientific world, which you can analyze even ultimately under the microscope. This is the biochemical structure of the human being. It's a material approach. That's one aspect of human being. But there's the mind, the spiritual aspect. And that is on a high level. And there's even the human conscience on the highest level. So the Yetzer HaTov is human conscience. The Yetzer HaRa are the materialistic, animalistic instincts of the human being, maybe on a somewhat higher level. And unfortunately, in most of our lives, is the materialistic, self-centered awareness of the human being that even causes sometimes to hide entirely from the human conscience and try to ignore it. In which case, the materialistic self has entirely suppressed the spiritual self. But the way of the Torah is the opposite. It is not to say that a person should ignore that he's a body, that he's human. No. If a person will ignore that he's physical, then his life here on earth will cease. Maybe his neshama will continue in some manner. If a person will go on fasting too much, or go without sleep too much, so then his physical self dies, and the soul goes back to its source in the spiritual dimension, and leaves the physical world. So therefore Hashem says like this, you've got to learn to love Hashem, also for everything physical, and use everything physical for the conscience, for the spiritual self, for the neshama. And the guf is there for the neshama. So that's how you love. If you love Hashem, you learn to also use that power of love to love all His creatures. Especially to love your wife and love your children in a positive manner, and then to love all human beings. And that's the principle of love should govern our life. And even this power of jealousy, which is your particular question. We're naturally jealous of someone else who's fulfilled ambitions that we have ourselves. What do you do with it? So the sages say, Kinat Sofrim Tabi Chokhmah. Use it. Use that jealousy, but don't use it for other people's wealth, for other people's wives, for other people's high position in society. Use it for greater in Torah and mitzvah. You see others doing a lot of chesed, be jealous of them. Yes, use that power of jealousy. If they can do so much loving kindness, if they're so helpful to everybody else, let me be helpful. If I see people around me who are always smiling, and I'm really jealous of them, so go and join them. Be jealous of them and smile yourself as well. They always show happiness, and you yourself got misery inside. So learn to be jealous of the others. And use that jealousy, keep smiling on the outside, and maybe the smile is on your face long enough, it'll go right into your heart. If you see others always giving, always coming, I want to thank you for me. I get so much chesed from some people. I'm also very grateful for people bring me a glass of water when I need it. Other things, all sorts of things. So, to learn for you free from all these people, also to keep on giving. And if you see other people growing in Torah, you sometimes see a student who's really, you can see, he's getting into tefillah, and into his davening. You can see from outside how he's enjoying the davening, how he lifts up his spirits. You can see someone who's able to get up early in the morning. So be jealous of him. Yep. So I also want to get up early in the morning with the Moed Ani Lefonecho. You know, that's the special procedure of getting up in the morning. Get up with the right foot instead of the left foot. See, and then the whole day will follow. You get over being too sleepy. You get over being being a bit depressed. You get over it and you see the beautiful. Here you're very fortunate, generally speaking. You have beautiful weather outside. And even when it's terrible weather, it starts snowing. It's also very exciting.
Beautiful.
It's also beautiful. You see the beauty. See the beauty of, so this way, and you see the beauty of learning. You see other people, how they enjoy the learning. So get into it as well. So that's how we should use jealousy.
If it does snow, I'm probably going to go sledding. So that's part of my tour.
Okay.
I'm so happy everybody's going to know on the tape here.
Okay. So
always be in simcha.
So now, yes, if the Shem b'simcha, that's a great principle, enormous principle in life. So we're halfway through this page of deeper insight, it's basically Maral, but also developed by Rav Dessler, on understanding the concept that the greater a person is, sometimes the more difficult are the challenges that he faces. And that's why when the world will change, in other words, the world will change, as we often spoke about the change that we should expect in this world. It should be transformed to a world of love and brotherhood and peace amongst all human beings instead of the opposite. Then it says that Hashem will, as it were, he will slaughter the power of evil. He'll ask them, what will then be the level of mankind? So as it's crystallized in the words of the Rambam, following the words of the prophet who says that ultimately says that the knowledge of Hashem will spread throughout the world like the waters cover the seabed. In other words, there'll be different variations of the depth of the sea, but the spirit of Hashem will be so strong that it will fall upon all mankind, and all mankind will feel the waters of the Torah, how they bring refreshment to life, and they bring the power of love to this world. But what will be then the ambitions of human beings? To reach a higher closeness to Hashem. And then the people of Israel become the teachers of mankind. So we're part of this people of Israel, and we're all now preparing ourselves, Mitzvah Hashem, to become teachers, as we explained, of Yeshivot, each one, that go into the thousands. Because that's the power of the Torah, which is the Deat Hashem, the knowledge of Hashem. So, until then, we are in a world which is filled with struggle. So we, as Israel, even the name Israel means those who struggle for God. Meanwhile, we're in the era of struggle. But ultimately, it says by the struggle between Yaakov and Esau, which is a dramatic depiction of the struggle of human history between the powers where might is right and the power where right is might. Right is might, that is, which is righteousness, is the true power which will bring peace to the world. Only righteousness, tzedek or mishpat. And that's represented by the people of Israel. And it's a constant struggle. I mean, today, just think about it slightly. There's no nation in the world, in its army, let's say, who introduce as much a morality and conscience as possible. In fact, that's the great debate in Israel. Some say that the left-wing groups in the country are quite strong, that they are always insisting we have to always consider the other side. And the right-wing say we can't consider the other side because they're too brutal. And this, the truth is that hundreds of soldiers of Israel have come to their death because the army is ambivalent in these matters. They don't always know which way to go. And I myself have known of instances, people, students of the yeshiva and others around personally, you know, when the army, and if they shot at a suspect Arab who seemed didn't want to give up his arms, and they shot him and they killed him, who goes into prison? Soldier. Very difficult situation. But there's a certain, it's called Tohar HaNeshek, purity of arms. And this is certainly one of the ambivalences of Midat Israel. If they would really follow halakha, they would have a clear guidance when to do and when not to do. We even today just read a report in the army. It says religious soldiers, many of them, they have the highest level of bravery. Many of them, they become officers, and some very intelligent. And the others, who don't have a right-wing policy, they think it's going too far. Even look inside from the religious aspect, also even from the point of view of their rabbis, sometimes tell them, you know, when you're surrounded, as I had a case once, somebody asked me, what's he going to do? He's in the milieu. Like was my children, everybody, they have to join in the forces in time of their call up all the reserves. So he's in the reserves, and he knows others have been in situation, he'll be in that situation as well, that he'll be surrounded, let's say, by 100 or a few hundred Arab youths with slings and stones, and some of them with petrol bombs, yeah, and that he's in a jeep by himself, yeah. And he's been given instructions. You're only allowed to shoot at their feet. If you shoot a bit higher, then you're responsible. Because then they don't come with proper arms. Some come with knives and so on, but still. And many in Jenin a few years ago, there was a whole business there to get rid of all the terrorists with arms who were in Jenin. And it happened as a result, I think a dozen of our soldiers were killed as a result. You know, if you got a few hundred of these, I mean, they make a lynch on the person. And many soldiers even been killed from the lynch, some being captured or whatever. So there's certain rules in the army, how far you can go. Because the left wingers, if they sometimes direct the politics. When the left wingers direct the politics, it's not so easy to fulfill self-defense as defined in the halakha. And maybe the soldiers, they'll ask their rabbi. And the rabbi will contradict the head officer. So, you know, these things happening daily. So there's no question, there's no nation in the world that would put in our position has so much consideration for innocent victims. Yeah. But that's the principle of the Torah. And also this whole business. We have that's what Hamas know. Hamas know this, and even the Rosh Hashanah know it. They know that if they're gonna have their terrorists shooting from the mosques, Jews will be hesitant to attack them. That means they can attack without any deterrent. Yeah? Similarly, if they have them in ambulances. They previously have the terrorists in the ambulances, or they have them in the hospitals, or they have them in the schools. That's with. And all the little children, they're trained already from childhood, that you can, it's one of the greatest commandments of Islam, to kill as many Jews as possible, even to give up your life for that. So how would you deal with such people? And we are, it's a vahaganah, only a protector. So it's a very different question. So who is upholding conscience at the military level? Only Israel, amongst all the nations of the world. Other nations, even the American, the others, in principle they believe in conscience still. Some of the Western European countries and some of America still believe in it. But on the other hand, they believe all the distortions, all the falsehood of the propaganda of the extreme Islam, which they use constantly, even to twist all types of incidents, to make out as though we Jews have no conscience. But we know that the actual truth is the opposite. The Jews, what happened here? What happened here in Har Nof? Even the king of Yarden, who was our friend, but I don't think he did it because he really wanted to. But he's probably forced to do it because of the spirit of extreme Islam, which has spread to his country as well. To whom did he send a letter of condolence? To the murderers. To the murderers who murdered, he said, to the families of the murderers. Yeah, and one of them was killed and the other one. So then they sent condolence. But he refused to send any form of condolence to these innocent people who were killed here. And this is what's happening today. The twisting of the human conscience. in matters of life and death. And we at Beit Israel, we've got to protect it. But that's part of our, for us, the human conscience, which is the voice of Hashem, has also expressed the Noahide Code, which is the basic international relations. We have to preserve it. And we've got to get the Western world to preserve it. And we've got to limit the wider aspect of some of the heads of state. I don't know how Putin's going, but we know Obama, you know, is semi-Muslim, semi-Christian, semi-Jewish. But he, you know, he's willing to make a compromise with Iran. And the Iranians are not far removed from Daesh. Yeah? I think they're more concerned that maybe Daesh is going to become so strong they'll take over from them. But they've got the same policy in mind with a bit of a smile, you know, from the heads. Smile to the West. And that's what's going on in the world today. So we have to keep up the conscience. We have to hope to Hashem that He will help this world today. We know that the biggest saints, sometimes they have the biggest also tests on their level. And that's why they will say on that day, how were we able to conquer the tests and reach a high level? And the wicked people will say, why did we give in so quickly? So I'll just read one more sentence, halfway down the page. Bechiyat harasha'im pirusha. What does it mean that wicked people will cry? They'll cry at that time, they say, why didn't we control our materialistic inclination? They're crying, and their feeling of pain, that they missed the chance, is their level of hell, of Gehinnom. That's their punishment. Punishment to the soul. The soul punishment, the only way we can perhaps understand it best today is if you read the description of near-death experiences, where the soul of a person goes up to heaven in different dimensions and comes back, is able to come back, and then afterwards recollects entirely what was the experience of the soul without having a material life. So they come in contact with a message from above, whatever was their concept of God. And then, the message is, did my soul fulfill its task, which it could have fulfilled? And sometimes there's a struggle in the soul. Shall I go back into the body, or shall I stay up here? And the struggle is based on this inner struggle of the human being. Because if he feels, I've so much missed my chance, I could have done so much good, and I've got so much more good to do, and I've got to do teshuva for the evil that I did, so I want to go back into the body. Although the soul knows just ahead of me, there's the greatest bliss and happiness which can't be explained in language beyond anything on this world. On the one hand, they say, if I go forward, through the tunnel, I'm into the area of enormous love and light, which is so far beyond anything which I've experienced here on earth, so I want to stay there. On the other hand, I haven't done what I'm supposed to do, what I could do. Therefore, they'll also come back. This is how it's described already in the Gemara, in the near-death experiences. It's all known, and it's very clear if you read all the Midrashim of near-death experiences, which go back to the Tanakh as well, but they're more in the Gemara. And they're far ahead in the understanding what's happening today. Today, there are already millions of records of near-death experiences. And even by people who were atheists, and whose whole philosophy is a materialistic one, and even by people who were neurosurgeons, and their whole life was doing research, brain research, and they come out, and they're always against, always that this, all just fairy stories. When they've experienced it, it's different. After they've experienced it, they come out and they say, proof from God is from heaven, I've come back to declare it. And that's now become common knowledge. So this is the Rosa. I've got to put it right so it comes back to this earth. So this explains to us, in Yitzhak Hashem, when the Gula will come, they'll say, well, I've missed my chance. So they'll cry. They'll have enormous pain of the conscience. But that in itself will purify them. If they feel pain from it, it means they're ashamed of it. And that spirit of shame will bring about real teshuvah for the Rishoyim. And that's a concept, many concepts of also why we say special Kaddish for people, for the Mishpat Rishoyim, it's considered like a year's suffering. So that's the concept of Ginnun. And the B'chiyat Tzadikim is they remember the enormous difficulty they had to conquer the wickedness inside themselves during their life. So that would be the pain of the saints. Okay, let's go. Yeah, I prefer if you keep the sheets and bring them with you. You won't have to keep printing new ones. And keep them, you can make your notes on them as well.